You're listening to LGRadio.online. Welcome to In the Benny Green Archives.
I've just had a hair's breadth escape from a dilemma. I happen to notice that today is the day that the lyric writer Howard Dietz was born, back in 1896. Of course, the prospect of discussing Dietz is an inviting one. He was a witty man, and he wrote some of the best lyrics of his generation. And that took some doing when you realise he was born in the same year as Ira Gershwin and Yip Harburg. So where was the dilemma? Well, it lay in the fact that I've already said all I have to say about Dietz on this programme at least twice over the years. Listeners don't seem to mind that kind of distant repetition, and there are always new listeners for whom it's fresh and fascinating. But it often troubles me. I always prefer presenting something new if I can find it. Where to find it on Dietz? And then I remembered, last time I went to New York in the spring of last year, I met Jonathan Schwartz, son of Arthur Schwartz, who was Dietz's partner. Well, I've met some moral supporters of this program in my time, but none more passionate than Jonathan. On the morning I was due to fly home, we met in his one-room office bedsitter in the Carnegie Hall building, and he generously allowed me to pester him with questions. What he said was fascinating. He is an erudite man and an eloquent one. Most important, very forthright and honest. So I hunted out the tape, listened to it, and realised my problem was solved. We talked for about half an hour, and we got on well because I think each sensed that the other had similar ideas. The talk was intermittently about Dietz, but it also embraced Frank Sinatra, among others, and of course Jonathan's father, Arthur. Before we launch into the conversation, let's remind listeners what Jonathan sounds like when he sings. Judging from the postbag, he's one of the most popular singers I've ever featured in this program, so I think it's going to be painless.
My life has been devoted to unraveling a mystery that's old but ever new. I've tried to find the kind of girl who'll do. I've done about a million miles of traveling. I've sailed on all the blue. And now at last I've hit on you. High and low, low and high, I've been looking for you. You've been hiding, or you'd have come to me. My, oh me, me, oh my, no investigator ever made a greater discovery. I cannot tell you what excitement that night meant when I met you, or what wrong or right meant our hearts only knew. I was low, now I'm high, high upon the steeple, telling all the people you've come. Cannot tell you what excitement that night meant when I met you, or what wrong or right meant our hearts only knew. I was low, now I'm high, high upon the steeple, telling all the people you've come to me. Telling all the people you've come to me. You've come to me. You've come to me. You've come to me.
Wow.
Wonderful song.
Jonathan Schwartz singing one of his father's songs. He's often singing one of his father's songs, and so he should. Pieces like High and Low have never received the recognition they deserve, and if it wasn't for men like him, such songs might die out altogether. That's what I meant when I said that he and I think along similar lines about popular song. Now, I began by placing Jonathan in the context of the Schwartz-Dietz career. Jonathan was born in 1938, which means that a great many of his father's triumphs had happened before he arrived. But Jonathan had studied it all, and he knew all about those days.
My father was established by two hit songs in the late 20s. I guess I'll have to change my plan, and Something to Remember You By. Interestingly, Something to Remember You By was written for, the melody was written for a British comedy review, and my father gave that beautiful melody later to Howard Dietz, who supplied the standard lyric, but the original lyric for that melody was, I have no words to say how much I love you. I've got the tune, but I've no words, dear. I've got a cottage and a room with a view, and H and C, but I've no words. I would beg for you, break a leg for you, lay an egg for you like the birds up in the treetop. I've got a song to say how much I love you. I've got the tune, but I've no words. My father gave that melody to Howard, who said, slow it down. And it became da 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 da.
You are leaving me, and I will try to face the world alone. What will be, but time cannot erase the love we've known. Let me but have a token through which your love is spoken. You are leaving me, but it will say you're mine. Oh, give me something to remember you by. When you are far away from me, dear, some little something meaning love cannot die. No matter where you chance to be, though I'll pray for you, night and day for you, it will see me through like a charm till you're returning. So give me something to remember you by. When you are far away from me. Give me something to remember you by. When you are far away from me.
Arthur Schwartz singing his own tune, Something to Remember You By, and it was one of his first hits. But my conversation with his son didn't proceed in sequence. We flitted about, and it wasn't long before a certain anger began to peep out. I happened to mention Howard Dietz's autobiography and was very quickly put in the picture.
Howard seems to me to be an enigmatic guy. I mean, I read his book, and he's obviously very literate, and he's well-read and educated.
That's not really a book. That's typing. It's a collection of anecdotes.
It's a collection of anecdotes.
Assembled by his widow, Lucinda Ballard, that reflects very favorably on Howard. Now, this is a book called Dancing in the Dark by Howard, and in the book, there are two somewhat hazy photographs of his collaborator, his chief collaborator, Schwartz, and there are 11 mentions of Schwartz. It's a Howard book, and obviously you detect in the son of the composer some irritation. I felt that, and correctly so, if you're going to write a book called Dancing in the Dark, and you have been, your chief fame is as a collaborator, it would seem to me that your collaborator ought to be more generously examined in a book called Dancing in the Dark.
So I hastily took the conversation in another direction and asked Schwartz Jr. about an episode in the life of Schwartz Sr. which has always baffled me. There's always been a deep chasm between the artist and the entrepreneur, but I knew Arthur had been something of an exception. I remember hearing that his financial advice was at the service of ASCAP for many years. Even so, one episode did puzzle me.
Arthur became a producer, and that's the way he was involved with Kearney Covergirl. How does a songwriter become a producer?
Harry Cohn asked him, period.
I mean, I don't know what the duties are of a producer. Are they specialized duties?
Well, I'll tell you just how specified they are. Harry Cohn, the head of Columbia Films, said to Arthur, I'd like you to produce a film, and Arthur said, but I've never produced a film, and Harry said, you'll produce this one. It's a musical. I want you to write the score for it with Ira Gershwin. Cover girl, we have Rita Hayworth, we have Gene Kelly, we have the financing, go to it, Arthur. Arthur became the producer, but instead of writing the score with Ira, he said, there's a better man than I available, and I'd like to hire him. He's Jerome Kern. And Harry Cohn said, very well, hire him.
The favorite doesn't always win, no matter what the odds. Since nobody knows how they'll come in, I'll leave it to the gods. So wish me luck, because I'm going to bet on a sentimental hunch my heart has suddenly set on. Sure thing in you, something within tells me we'll win. Somewhere my heart has picked you out of the blue.
Sure Thing wasn't really noticed when Cover Girl appeared. The big song, Long Ago and Far Away, rightly took all the honours. But Sure Thing never deserved that neglect. It was sung there, by the way, by Diane Scher. Now, this business of good songs left by the wayside was something I was going to come to in my talk with Jonathan. But first, there was the business of the first Jonathan Schwartz vocal I ever played in this programme. It was from a late flowering bloom of Schwartz and Dietz, a 1960s show called Jenny. And I asked Jonathan what it was all about and whatever happened to it.
Well, it was a Mary Martin show. My father felt it was a big opportunity because he associated Mary Martin with success, obviously, because of Rodgers and Hammerstein, South Pacific, and other shows like Peter Pan. And it was unsuccessful in the extreme. My father even had the Rodgers and Hammerstein Theater he so coveted, the Majestic. It's not a good score. It has a couple good songs. And there's this throwaway in it, kind of a march song, When You're Far Away from New York Town, sung by a tenor with a chorus. And I always heard it as a kind of an anthem to New York in a different rhythm. And when I started to sing publicly, I pulled it out and gave it to my friend Tony Monti, my friend and pianist of many years. And we worked up an arrangement for it. I've recorded it twice. It's a wonderful song, and it precedes Sinatra's New York, New York. I want everyone to know.
When you're far away from New York town, you're nowhere at all. You may roam through the whole USA. Will you see any sights like the lights of Broadway? Their friendly glow will make you feel as though the big town is really small. When you're far away from New York town, you're nowhere at all. When you're far away from New York town, you're nowhere at all. You may roam through the whole USA. Will you see any sights like the lights of Broadway? Really small. When you're far away from New York town, you're nowhere, absolutely nowhere at all.
That performance was recorded in Michael's Pub in New York, July 12, 1978, the eighth day of Jonathan's singing career. He was the big surprise singer of the year, perhaps the decade. People knew him as a broadcaster and a novelist. Suddenly, he starts singing. I remember Arthur once saying to me, "You should hear my son sing." At that time, I didn't even know Arthur had a son. And as there were no albums, I had to pass. But I was curious to know what Arthur really thought of it all.
Oh, he would come two or three times during the during an engagement. I dug out a lot of songs by Arthur that are not known. Songs like Thief in the Night. My favorite is a song called A Rainy Day. A rainy day is when I met her. A rainy day. There's nothing better. You see, it happened. We were sharing a taxi. It was a rainy day. It's on an album of mine called Anyone Would Love You. And it's just epitomizes the mid-1930s when it was possible to share a cab in New York with a stranger. And it's a great Howard Dietz lyric. It has a wonderful verse, beautifully written song, one of the great songs, I think.
Do you remember the verse?
Sure. Let me see. You like the blue. Let me see. You like the... I haven't sung it now in a year.
You like the blue and the sun with a glare. Give me a shade of gray. For when the storm clouds were hovering there, my future came my way. For when there's a shower and when there's a squall, I am more content. For after all, a rainy day is when I met her. A rainy day, there's nothing better. You see it happen, we were sharing a taxi. It was a rainy day. Of course, at first, we both were formal. But soon we veered around to normal. And then we sort of spent the day the taxi. It was a rainy day. What I sought long and vain, I had found in the rain that day, my day. And we drove through the crowd, and she chased every cloud away, away. I took her home, but not to her home. She felt at once as though she were home. And we went on where we left off in the taxi. It was a rainy day. What I sought long and vain, I had found in the rain that day, my day. And we drove through the crowd, and she chased every cloud away, away. I took her home, but not to her home. She felt at once as though she were home. And we went on where we left off in the taxi. It was a rainy day. A rainy, rainy day.
Rainy Day, we got onto the subject of Fred Astaire. Now, he jumped into my mind because of the film The Bandwagon. But before we arrived anywhere near that, the talk had veered off on another tangent and another Arthur Schwartz song.
I didn't know Fred Astaire, but I was around him on two or three occasions.
He was a strange guy because all he wanted to do was be a songwriter.
Mm-hmm. And he was a very pedestrian songwriter.
Well, I mean, I thought that he had one song, building up an awful letdown.
Yeah.
But it appears that Mercer wrote most of that, it seems.
Oh, if you dig under practically anything, you'll find that Mercer wrote most of it. Any song by anybody. Some Enchanted Evening, Mercer wrote most of it. This is, of course, not true.
No, but, I know it's true.
Nonetheless, you'll find that Mercer wrote most of everything. In fact, Where Do I Go From You, a song you have mentioned, was written first with a Johnny Mercer lyric called Remind Me to Dream of This. It was for a movie called Navy Blues, Arthur and Johnny.
You don't remember the lyrics to that?
I don't. But you can hear, remind me to dream of this, remind me to dream of this. And my father gave the melody 8 years later to Dorothy Fields, who wrote, "It isn't fun when you discover you're not the one. Big moment for your lover. This parting is overdue, but where do I go from you?" Oh, yeah. I mean, that song, the only person who knew it was me. In fact, when my father was alive, before I sang it publicly, there was one person who knew the lyric in its entirety, and only one other person who knew the actual melody and the changes in the bridge, and that was Arthur. So we got together, and he taught me the actual melody with the actual changes in the bridge, and I taught him the lyric. That made two people who knew "Where Do I Go From You?" And then I began to sing it at Michael's Pub, immediately recorded it on that first album. And I've made three albums, and it's on all three albums. That's the original version on the Michael's Pub album, which is not actually the original version, that's the second version. I sing a blue note in it that Arthur never liked, and I sang it out of fatigue. It was the third show that night. When I say a blue note, I mean, "It isn't fun when you discover you're not the one. Big moment for your lover. This parting is overdue, but where do I go from you? It's where do I go from you?" It's an all major melody. But the blue note, when you're tired, and that third show started that night, the 12th of July, at about 1 o'clock. And I got to "Where Do I Go From You?" And I had now sung about 46 or 7 songs that night. And I was just exhausted. And it's easier to sing, just "Where Do I Go From You?" You can cheat, in effect. That's how many blue notes are born by singers, cheating.
I think that's a good effect. It's like improvising. Jazz musicians often change the major third or a minor third. It's fine.
Well, but you see, it's a very Harold Arlen thing to do.
Yeah.
But Arthur was very pure and disciplined, and was not a blues writer. He was, as I said earlier, a writer for the urban articulate, and for that crowd, that blue note was something of an anachronism. And I really didn't mean it. I was just tired, and Arthur didn't like it at all. And my other two recordings are accurate.
It isn't fun when you discover you're not the one. Big moment for your lover. This parting is overdue, but where do I go from you? So well begun, so neatly ended. I'll be your friend, but I won't be befriended. Lover, I wish I knew, where do I go from you? To the sky, to the sea, to the next best pair of arms. You're the sky, you're the sea, and there is no next best pair of arms. It isn't fun when you hang on to a darling foolish love who doesn't want to. Lover, I wish I knew, where do I go from you? To the sky, to the sea, to the next best pair of arms. You're the sky,
of a sea, and there is no next best pair of arms. It isn't fun when you hang on to a darling foolish love who doesn't want to. Lover, I wish I knew just where do I go from you?
Now, Jonathan sings the song perfectly, but he was hazy about its origins. He thought it came from the 1935 review At Home Abroad. In fact, it was earlier than that, a show called Flying Colours, 1932. And already by then, Dietz's reputation was encrusted with anecdote. But as smart as they are, the stories fade into insignificance before the tenderness and subtlety of the songs. For instance, the one Jonathan mentioned, A Thief in the Night. Totally unknown. It did come from the review At Home Abroad, 1935, starring Beatrice Lilly and Ethel Waters, ran about 6 months and has since faded. Unjustly so, I'd say, on the evidence. Is there a lyric writer anywhere, a real lyric writer, who can fail to respond to this?
You're just a thief in the night. Nothing but a thief in the night. You came without a warning and left before the morning broke through. I never knew I'd never see you again. You're an education to men. The one I had belief in turned out to be a thief in the night. Oh, how I worried and fretted and got myself in a pet, wishing we'd never met. Moping and hoping and swearing I'd square accounts yet. Friends declare my eyes are always wet, 'cause a thief in the night my heart and vanished from sight. I knew I'd come to grief in believing in a thief in the night. Myself in a pet, wishing we'd never met. Moping and hoping and swearing I'd square accounts yet. Friends declare my eyes are always wet, 'cause a thief in the night my heart and vanished from sight. The one I had belief in, let there be no relief in believing. In the night.
There was another theme that I wanted to discuss with Jonathan, the business of the attitude of great composers to jazz musicians. Every one of them, except George Gershwin, took offence when jazz musicians started improvising on the famous tunes. They didn't like it at all. The Jerome Kern estate even threatened to go to law over it. To a jazz musician, the whole thing is senseless. And much as I revered the wonderful things Arthur Schwartz had written, I did suspect that in this matter, he stood with Richard Rodgers and Cole Porter and Kern in his deep suspicion of improvisers. It turned out that not only were my suspicions justified, but that the prejudice extended even to the greatest singers.
I got this impression from Arthur, but I never pursued it. He wouldn't have been too keen then on jazz musicians who improvised on the songs.
It's too bad, he just never understood it. And I used to go and bring a Miles Davis record, say, of I See Your Face Before Me on Prestige, which is just great. And I said, Daddy, listen to this. And he said, well, he's not playing the melody. Miles played, I see your face before me, crowding my every dream. There is your face before me, you are my only theme. Arthur wrote, you are my only theme. But even in my own singing of I See Your Face Before Me, which is on the Michael's Pub album that you have, I sing what Miles taught me. You are my only theme. That's Miles, not Jonathan. But then, of course, you'll find Miles hidden away in many a singer.
I used to say to him, I did discuss it with him, and said, you know, it's the highest compliment that a composer could get paid is when a jazz musician wants to play around the
Absolutely.
It's the ultimate accolade.
Arthur did not understand that.
He didn't grasp that.
Alone Together, I would say, is the most frequently used melody by Arthur in the world of jazz. No, my father was very rigid. He didn't like Sinatra's records. I See Your Face is an example. Sinatra sings, I see your face before me. And Arthur very painstakingly wrote that melody on one note. Da 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 da. And Sinatra's record of Dancing in the Dark is a jump record with a Billy May up-tempo arrangement, as is You and the Night and the Music. Arthur wrote a sweeping ballad, da 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 da. And so when Sinatra arrived on the scene with his 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4, Arthur was offended. And I kept saying, come on, Daddy, this is Sinatra's record.
I see your face before me, crowding my every dream. There is your face before me. You are my only theme. It doesn't matter where you are. I can see how fair you are. I close my eyes and there you are. Always. If you could share the magic, yes, if you could see me too, there would be nothing tragic in all my dreams of you. Would that my love could haunt you so, knowing I want you so. I can't erase your beautiful face before me. Thank you.
that my love could haunt you so, knowing I want you so. I can't erase your beautiful face before me.
Well, it sounds good enough to me, but composers do tend to be fussy, and Sinatra did sometimes ruffle the professorial feathers a bit. By this time, my conversation with Jonathan had reached a stage where we both realised that we agreed on most things and that there was a danger of our talk degenerating into mumbled agreements. Then I remember reviewing a film, The Bandwagon, and I was going into detail as to the parallels between the plot of the picture and the real-life experiences of Astaire and the writers Comden and Green. Jonathan then said something that was new to me. It was the same old business of an outstanding song which very nearly never made it.
Interestingly, when it was decided that Betty and Adolph should write the screenplay and that there would be a film called The Bandwagon and Fred Astaire would appear in it, Fred said, wait a minute, there's a song of Schwartz and Dietz that just never has been heard. I remember it back in a... Jack Buchanan sang it in a show. Now, Jack Buchanan was in The Bandwagon. And Fred said, let's get that song out. Where is that song? So my father pulled By Myself out. Had it never been heard? It had never been heard, Benny.
I'll go my way by myself. This is the end of romance. I'll go my way by myself. Love is only a dance. I'll try to apply myself and teach my heart how to sing. I'll go my way by myself, like a bird on the way. I'll face the unknown. Alone.
When Fred sings that song in the film The Bandwagon as he steps off the train at Grand Central, it's one of the definitive moments in screen history. The brave defiance of the words, the lilting tempo, and that dancing walk of Fred's, which uses the shoulders as no Diaghilev ever dreamed. And at the heart of it all, the work of Schwartz and Dietz. When I saw the film for the first time, I naturally assumed that By Myself was a tremendous standard that had escaped my attention. To learn from Jonathan that till that moment when Fred sings it in the picture, it was totally unknown, came as a kind of shock, but in a funny way, not really a surprise. Who knows how many songs like it have never had the break that gives them a life? In a way, that's what a singer-writer like Jonathan Schwartz is all about. Finally, we came to the most contentious of all the themes in our conversation. Now, I should make it clear that what Jonathan says is not necessarily what I would say. I'm not really qualified to have any views here. Clearly, Jonathan feels very strongly on the subject, but I've included it for the eloquence of his tribute to the man as an artist.
If I were asked, and I haven't been, to define what a genius is, I would say something like, a genius is someone who creates something holy in a new voice. Now, Sinatra was an interpretive singer. He was the messenger. But I think that a messenger who is a genius is a person who works on behalf of the songwriter or the writer in a new voice and in a holy way. And I feel that Sinatra is one of the few geniuses of the field. Louis Armstrong, clearly. Billie Holiday. And few others. He was the messenger. And what he did was to implant his own personality into the guts, the innards of American popular songs. On a level of high art, the thing that has interested the world about this particular humanoid walking around is the dichotomy between the high art and the crummy guy. This has never been explained properly. And as long as it hasn't been explained, people keep asking in their hearts. They don't realize that that's what the issue is, why they're so attracted to this fellow. But I think that's what it is. That he has functioned on an artistic level that no one else has ever achieved in this field. Popular songs, American classical music. And the other side is I was going to use the word dark, but that's not right. Dark, there's a certain attractiveness to it. It's just crummy. It's high disregard for other people, basically. But yet, what's reflected in the high art is a true intellectual man, a man you'd want to know, in fact.
Dancing in the dark, till the tune ends, we're dancing in the dark. And it soon ends, we're waltzing in the wonder of why we're here. Time hurries by, we're here, and we're gone, looking for the light of a new love to brighten up the night. I have you, love, and we can face the music together, dancing in the dark. What though love is old, what though song is old, through them we can be young. Hear this heart of mine, well, in all the time, dear one, tell me that we're one. Thank you.
longing for the light of a new love to brighten up the night. I have you, love, and we can face the music together. Dancing in the dark, dancing in the dark, dancing in the dark.
Well, it's very hard not to like that. For me, it's wonderful. It's interesting that it sounds wonderful to Jonathan Schwartz too, in spite of his view of Sinatra the Man. Schwartz himself is one of the very few male singers with a style that moves you. Of course, not a Sinatra can, but sometimes there is a depth to the singing you can't forget. This fragment I never raised in our conversation. I wish I had, because it seems to me to go straight to the heart of things. It's part of the output of the old firm of Schwartz and Dietz.
As a leaf is part of the tree, I'm part of you. As a wave is part of the sea, I'm part of you. How could you be taken from me? Nothing can divide us in two. You and I belong to each other, dear. I am part of you.
I don't know where that comes from or what it was written for. It doesn't matter. All that is important is that by committing it to record, Jonathan Schwartz has saved it from oblivion. Such songs deserve to be saved. They should never be forgotten. They are what Jonathan said of Sinatra. They are high art. When we discussed the film The Bandwagon, Jonathan pointed out that only one new song was written for the film, and it was this one. And for the moment, that's it. See you same time next week.
Clouds with his cast falling down, or the dance that's a dream of romance, or the scene where the villain is me. That's entertainment. The lights on the lady in tights, or the bride with the guy on the side, or the ball where she gives him her all. That's entertainment. The plot can be hot, simply teeming with sex. A gay divorcee who is after her ex. It can be Oedipus Rex, where a chap kills his father and costs a lot of bother. The clerk who is thrown out of work by the boss, who is thrown for a loss by the scourge, who is doing him dirt. The world is the stage. The stage is a world of entertainment. Scene like you see on the screen, a swain getting slain for the love of a queen. Some great Shakespearean scene where a ghost and a prince meet, and everything ends in mincemeat. The gag may be waving the flag that began with the Mr. Cohan. Hip hooray, the American way. The world is the stage. The stage is a world of entertainment.
You've been listening to In the Benny Green Archives here on lgradio.online. Please do visit the website to find out when the next episode is on, along with all our other shows. This is lgradio.online. Thanks for listening.